Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Chof Ches. So we're going ahead with a lot of energy here. And we're at the last line of Kuf Chof Zayin Amud Beis, which is about the Turmus HaYavesh. And we said that, well, goats can eat Turmus HaYavesh, and it's Dafka Turmus HaYavesh, surprisingly, because fresh Turmus is actually so bitter that you can't even get a goat to eat it, and because of that, given to Morir, lo achla. Okay, now at the top of Kuf Chof Ches. So now the Mishnah told us a bunch of things that, again, seem to be very poshut, because on the list of things that seem to be poshut, that you are allowed to move are problematic, the same things that you're not allowed to move become poshut instead of being problematic. And therefore, the Gemara asks on each one of them. So it says over here, you're not allowed to move tevel because it's not roi l'achila. This is the Gemara. Well, obviously, what's the chiddush in that? Ah, because what we're talking about over here is it isn't tevel midiraisa. It's actually been grown in a pot that does not have any kind of outlet or intake for water on the bottom. So it's a natzit sheino nakuv. And that is really only a derabbanan that you have to take off meiser from there. So the chiddush over here is that nonetheless, you can't move it because if even though it's tevel, tovel midrabbanan, it is considered to be muktzah. Okay, and then you say, Meiser Rishon that I did not take off Trumas Meiser. I mean, that's tevel, basically. So what's the havam in a pshita? Nah, that has to do with yesterday's Gemara, because it's talking about over here that you did exactly what Rav Papa said to Abaya you ought to be allowed to do. You went ahead and you took off the Meiser Rishon before Truma Gedola. However, you did it after the grain was already piled up in the Kri. So it had already been Chayev in Truma. It was Idgan, right? So that's exactly the case. It's talking about Shigdimo Bakri, and you took off Meiser, but you didn't take off Truma Gedola. And I might have thought, since I took off Trumas Meiser, it would be enough, because that's what Rav Papa said. Well, according to you, if the Pesuk says, Ma'aser mina ma'aser amarti lecha velo truma gedola u'ma'aser mina ma'aser, how do you know that that doesn't apply even to the case of Higdimo Bikri, and not Higdimo Bishibolim, as we said yesterday? Kamash bala, no. The answer to that is, like Abaya said, that's why it says, es kol truma tashem. And that refers to a case where it was already idgan, such as over here. The next case is, if you were not paid a Meiser Sheni, you cannot move it. Well, obviously, if I'm not paid a Meiser Sheni, it's not roy to eat unless I'm in Yerushalayim. Though Tzricha, it's talking about over here, you were poda it, but you didn't poda it properly. Now, yesterday we said that the Chiddush Mishnah is talking about that when it says you were poda it, it means, and it's mutter to move, it's talking about you were poda it without paying the chomesh. And there the chiddush is that, on the contrary, that's good enough, and you have a debt to pay of the chomesh if you're the bialim, right? And over here it says, if it wasn't podui ki hilchatan, now that can't be the same case. I mean, it would be contradiction in the Mishnah. So what it's talking about over here is that you used an asimon to be poda it with. Now, since they canceled the asimons, and now everybody's got these telephones, anyway, cell phones, what could No, it's probably not that kind of asimon. So an asimon actually means a non-minted coin. So it's like a piece of metal, basically. It's like a ticket that you can use. It's equivalent of a coin. So you would think that that's okay.
A slug.
So the Rachman Amar Vitzarta HaKesef Biyadecha. Why does it use the word vitzarta? That's a strange way of saying, you know, to wrap it up in your hand. Well, wrap it up. I just say ala kesef. So therefore, it's coming to tell me that it has to be tzarta. It's got to be a davar sheyesh bo tzura, and it has a minted image on it of some kind. And the other, what about the case of Hegdash? You're allowed to. It doesn't say tzarta legabe Hegdash. You can use anything for Hegdash. So what would be the case over there to tell me that it's still considered to be usser? Oh, you were paid of the Hegdash, but you did it wrong. How did you do it wrong? You were mechalalit on real estate, and it's not chal, because it says over there, Megabe Hegdash, v'natan ha-kesef v'kamlo. V'natan means it has to be a dover that is nita miyad liyad, and therefore it does not include property. Moving on. So, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel came out with his amazing halacha, that look, even though luf is not roi to be eaten raw, but it's good enough to feed ravens. So, I mean, like, who's got ravens? So this actually ends up being like a major issue. Let's take a look at the brisa. You're allowed to be metatel chatzav. It doesn't really matter what these things are. Remember chatzav, that was the special plant that Yoshua used because it grows straight down and the roots can be actually used to determine where a property line is because they just stay there forever. So they use chatzav at the beginning and the borders between different properties of the Shvatim and the Mishpachas. They use chatzav so they wouldn't come in the end to have all kinds of issues about where property lines are. Now, of course, if you got in-laws like Richie that are professional surveyors, you have them come around every year and fix things up for you, you don't need chatzav. But not everybody's got their own islands. So because of that, the chatzav was very popular. But you're actually allowed to move it on Shabbos because deer like to eat chatzav, and you're even allowed to use mustard. We said before you can't use mustard. Didn't we say that mustard is no good in Mishnah because you can only use it for grinding and so on? So, okay, it could be as a machlokas, or it could be we're talking about in different places. So in a place where people raise yonim, so it's good food for yonim, even if it isn't crushed. Rav Shimon Gamliel takes a step further. Rav Shimon Gamliel says you can even have broken glass because, I mean, it's great for your ostriches. You know, they use it for digestion. Says Rabbi Nassan, so if that's the case, so then you should be allowed to use even the chavile zmorot that we said you have these bundles of branches. You can move that also because that's good food for elephants. I mean, so why not have that? And I think La Principessa loves her pet elephant. So because of that, I'm not getting any rise out of Richie today at all. And he's probably not even there. That's what I suspect when there's no response from Richie. It's a nice trick. But, So I thought La Principessa was listening in. I figured I'd give her a mention, you know. So, okay. Well, considering that Havdalah was about 3 a.m. Okay, so that's certainly excusable. Okay, so in any event, I don't understand. I mean, if we're talking about the fact that things that are usable on some level for some animals somewhere, I mean, so then, you know, there's always dinosaurs that could eat. I mean, what's that supposed to mean? You give it to your elephant. It says they're trimming them leal now. I mean, what do you mean? Ostriches people raise, you know? I mean, if you got a lot of money, and it's a very nice way to decorate your lawn and keep away intruders. They're great for chasing intruders. You thought dogs were good. Let me tell you, you got a guy hightailing it out of your yard with an ostrich by off air. So, Pelin, on the other hand, elephants are not really very popular as a pet for obvious reasons. Omar Amemar, Vuhu de Isle Naamaniot. I mean, look, I mean, Rav Shimon Gamliel can't be saying that theoretically you could feed this to ostriches. I mean, it's got to be that you've got ostriches, right? I mean, otherwise it doesn't make sense. Says Rav Ashi to Amemar, on the contrary, because then if Rabbi Nassan told Rav Shimon Gamliel, so what's wrong with giving it to elephants? If he's talking about that the guy does have a pet elephant, why would he not be allowed to move it for his elephant? I mean, he can't be talking about that you actually own the elephant, you own the ostriches. Ella must be that what Rav Nassan was saying, look, it's roi for elephants. So if you're ready to say something which is roi for na'amiot, so then clearly Rav Shimon Gamliel was not talking about that you actually do have one of these things in your yard. So what is it really all about? What's Rav Shimon Gamliel saying? Says Abaye, this is actually a shita that we've met many times before. And in fact, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel over here, Rabbi Shimon that we had earlier, which I'm going to bring to you and explain to you, says Abaye, and Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, basically they all take for granted that Kol Yisrael b'nei melachim heim, something that is roi for anybody. It could be the most rich and nobleman in the world is something that is roi for every ben Yisrael. And that's the point. Rav Shimon Gamliel, that is basically what he was saying. That, look, I mean, you know, if you want to go all the way on the nobility thing, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of fun to raise ostriches, you know. And Rabbi Shimon, we had that before. B'nei Melachim, Sachin Agabi Makoteim, Shemen Verich, Kein Darkin Shebnei Melachim Asuf Bechol. Remember, we talked before about Shemen Verich on Shabbos, whether it's considered to be Dafka or Refua, because nobody would use something that expensive unless he's got a problem. And over there, Rabbi Shimon said that's not so, because anybody is considered to be the equivalent of princes. and therefore Kol Yisroel B'nai Melachim Hem. That's basically the same idea. If it's roi for the greatest, then it's roi for anybody in Yisroel. Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva also holds the same thing, because we have a din of bankruptcy. And the din of bankruptcy is that you cannot completely strip a person of everything that they need to survive, and you leave them their basic needs. One of the basic needs, obviously, is their clothing. So suppose a guy owes $100,000, you know, and he doesn't have the ability to pay up, so he's declaring bankruptcy. So now we're going to go and we're going to see what kind of assets we have that we can sell. Well, this guy is wearing a $5,000, designer suit. Maybe he can do without his $5,000 designer suit. We could buy him an off-the-rack suit and take his $5,000 designer suit and sell it and get his creditors some money, right? So he's lovush itzela bat mea mona. So we strip him, mafshitinoto, and we buy him a cheap suit, mabishinoto itzela ruuya. But Rabbi Yishmael said in one braita, and Rabbi Akiva said in another braita, this is a famous, it's become actually a saying, that kol Yisrael ruuyila ota itzela. Every single Ben Yisrael is roi for a $5,000 designer suit, and we absolutely will not take it off of him. So those shitas all hold of the that hashivas of Yisrael as an operative halachic principle. Then we set chavilei kash vechavilei zrodim. So if you set them aside specifically to feed to your animals, so then they're not muksa. But if not, then they are muksa. So let's take a look at the braisa. Tana rabbana. Chavilei kash vechavilei etzim vechavilei zrodim. Zrodim are like soft reeds. Im itkinan l'ma'achal beima metaltelinotan. V'im lav ein metaltelinotan. So it depends on how it is that you are magdir them yourself. Now, obviously, this is a contradiction, right? In other words, what do you mean? Imit kinam v'imlav ein metaltelinotan, as opposed to the other way. What we had before, that if we're talking about, let's say, glass, right? So we said over there, even though they're just roi for the amiyot, we didn't say you have to be, you have to be setting them aside specifically to feed to the amiyot. How come these things you have to set aside? So the Rishonim make a very clear-cut differentiation in the dinim that where we require actually giving them a specific designation as being animal feed and when we don't. If something has a normative default use, which these things do, chavilei kash, chavilei etzim, they're usually put right into your stove in order to heat it up. So if you have it specifically designated it, so then it's going to be firewood. Well, firewood as a default is considered to be muksa, obviously. Glass, what's the default of glass? Broken glass. There's no default for broken glass. And because of that, unless you didn't at least specifically gave it for something else, we would be able to use it for something that would be animal feed, because there's no other usage that would be contradictory to that. So that's really a big difference between these two cases. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Chavilina Nitalin, even if you said specifically, I'm going to feed this, there's another limitation over here, and that's the limitation of tircha. And so if it's nitalin biyad echad mutter l'taltalan, if it's such a big bundle that you're going to have to use both hands, then there's an inyan of tircha on Shabbos, where it's not the norm to move this kind of thing. And there's no tzorach mitzvah over here because guests came along and so on. So then you wouldn't be allowed to move it. Chavilei siya eza v'koranit, which we'll talk about in a moment, what they are. So if you brought these in to use for fuel, so basically you're going to let them get dried up and then burn them, so then you can't use them on Shabbos. But if you brought them in for a behemah, so then you can use them for Shabbos. Now, this is obviously a contradiction. The first part contradicts the second part, because you can't, what about if you didn't have a specific designation, right? I mean, over here, it's contrasting two designations. Well, what about the Parva case, where there was no designation? So Tosfos says, look, what it means over here is that if you brought them in for the purposes of drying them and burning them, so then they're muksa. But if you didn't specifically say that, then nasa kimi. That's how to read it. So it's as if it would be the same thing as you had set it aside to feed for an animal. Fine. Okay. I mean, that's common enough that we have that kind of thing, that there's a default. And that the nasa is often presented as if, and if you designated them, meaning you didn't designate them at all, but that the stam would be a designation, then that's the halacha. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, got lost over here. So then the Malchal Behima, Mistapik Behem Shabbos. And look, you know, I mean, even if you had set them aside for Malchal Behima, that doesn't mean that you're not allowed to eat them. I mean, you'd be allowed to like break a little piece off. You know, if you're hungry and you find a softer piece, you can break it off and eat it. As long as you don't be kotein bekli, as long as you don't use like a knife to chop it, because then already you're going to be getting into the problem of trina. And molel v'ochel, what's even more interesting is that some of these things have pods, seed pods. Now, it's clear that taking seeds out of a pod where they're closely enclosed and you have to break it open to take off the seeds, that is going to be disha, which is the equivalent of threshing. You're loosening up the contents in order to be able to get to the edible matter. And you'd be doing that over here too. Nonetheless, you're allowed to rub a little bit between your palms, because that's not, there's a number of different approaches among Rishonim. Why isn't that disha? So remember, we had a concept that anything that's done in the context of eating things is considered to be just derech achila and not a malacha. This we talked about also in terms of watermelon seeds and stuff like that, how far we go with the derech achila. There's some that are matir, pulling the bones out from a fish before you eat it, because if you're going to pop it right into your mouth, so that it's considered to be derech achila, so you can take out the vertebrae and so on. Okay, so some learn that that's the issue over here as well. Others learn that it's not that, it's that that's not the derech of disha. The derech of disha is to pound on it and not to rub it between your palms. So rubbing it between your palms, since it is, it's a chachila, the rabbanon didn't aser. As long as you don't do a lot at a time, where over there it really would be similar to real disha. Now, that's a question on the girsa. There are different Rishonim that are goris the word, not only u'bevat shelo yimlo bekli, but the girsa that we have here, u'bevat shelo yimlo bekli harbe. So is the issue both of these items, in other words, it needs to be a lot at a time that makes it disha-oriented, plus being done with a kli, or do we not have that girsa harbe, and just using a kli is the derech of disha? That's about Machlokes Rishonim. V'chachomim omrim, even that's no good. Because rubbing something between your palms is not considered to be something that is literally derech achila. Why do you need to do it with your palms? If you're about to eat it, just rub a little bit between your fingertips and eat it that way. So you'd have to be molo baroshe etzba otava ochel, ubilvat shaloilim lol biyodo harbe kederech shoose bechol. Here you have to be careful, even if you're using your fingertips. If you do a lot, then that would also be similar to disha. So it would be also similar to rabbanan. Now, this should not lead us to think that you'd be allowed to do the same thing with grain, because the Gemara says specifically elsewhere, you're not allowed to be molel at all. You can come up with any heter for melila. Again, a lot of discussion. So why is the melila be'etzpa'ot of grain more similar to disha d'oraisa than these kinds of pod-growing things? Okay, you can use your imagination for why they're different. Obviously, one of them is the Iker Malacha. And the same thing would be true to Amita, which has a very strong similarity to the word mint, and the Gemara is going to say that's exactly what it is, mint. So, V'chein ba'amita, V'chein befegam, and other types of spices would be the same Malacha. What exactly is Amita? It's mint, nanya. And what is the sia that you talk about? Says Rabbi, the sia is tzatre. And everybody knows what tzatre is, although I can't say that I do. So Rashi does say the interesting word poliol, which sounds like pennyroyal. And because of this, some say that it's pennyroyal. But I can't really tell you more than the sound being mash, but it's pennyroyal. What is Azov? Azov is what we always say Azov is hyssop, and that's Abarta. And Koranit, that's what they call Kornita, you know. No, I don't know, because Arudi Armaluman boy Kornita, there was this guy going around selling Kornita, and everybody wanted to see, okay, what is Kornita? They came out and, okay, we want a piece of Kornita. Anyway, it turned out to be Chashe. I don't know what Chashe is, but it's certainly not Kornita. So how come you said that Kornita is Kornit? Says Gemara, okay, fine. I guess we made a mistake. So Sia would be the Tzarte, like you said. The Ezov is the Hyssop, like you said, the Abarta. And apparently, Koranit is Chashik. Itma. Moving on to different types of foods. Let's say meat. Meat that has been salted, okay? And it's not cooked. So if it's salted, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos because even though it's not cooked, the salt itself is enough to prepare it for eating raw. What's the name of that beef stuff that they sell raw like that?
Carpaccio.
Carpaccio, right. Okay, so it's roy to eat like that. Richie's about to make some, I think.
Other word for it, yeah.
What's the other word?
Tatar.
Too many people talking at once. Let's hear Richie.
Beef tatar.
Ah, tatar. Yes, yes. True, correct, forgot that one. Okay, so in any event, it's obviously roy if everybody's dreaming about having some, and therefore it's okay. But if it's raw meat, then, I mean, unsalted raw meat, then Ravuna says it's still mutter to move it, because Rashi says, because he doesn't hold a muksa, meaning he thinks this is going dafka libet Rabbi Yehuda. Whereas Rav Chista says it's osur letaltalo, because that would be Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Huna amar mutter letaltalo, how could that be? Rav Huna was a Talmud of Rav, was the most famous Talmud of Rav, and we saw before that Rav held like Rabbi Yehuda when it came to Muktzah. So how come all of a sudden Rav Huna is saying, I don't hold of Muktzah, I hold of Rabbi Shimon, when he argues on his Rebbe? Yes, but there's different Muktzahs. Now, it's fascinating, a new idea, and that is, in the same way that we've seen different halachas, l'chumra, in terms of Tumah V'Tayra, in eating versus touching, in terms of muktzah, there's a different dinim of muktzah between eating something that has to be completely mukhan for you or between just moving something. Now, that's a whole brand new idea. So when it comes to muktzah la'achila, so then Rav holds indeed like Rav Yehuda and he's machmir because over there it needs to be fully ready, mukhan. But when in muktzah letalto, because that is a much less committed type of interaction with the substance, so over there, it's obviously, I mean, you're ready to move just about anything without giving it much thought. You're certainly not ready to eat just about anything without giving it much thought. So it makes sense that if there's a question, you're going out libe the Rebbe Yehuda, who holds that hachana is something that fundamentally defines your relationship to things on Shabbos, and eating, of course, is the ultimate thing that hachana deals with, because that's where it appears in the Torah. That's the man, and that's v'yachinu et asher yaviyu. So the concept of muktzah being the antithesis of hachana is certainly going to be much more applicable to inyanim of achila than it would be just to casually move something. So therefore, Rav Huna actually says, well, there's a difference between muktzah in terms of achila, where I pask like Rabbi Yehuda, and muktzah in terms of tiltul, where I pask like Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so let me ask you something else then. You're saying that Rav Chista says you're not allowed to move the raw meat if it wasn't salted? I happen to know for a fact that Rav Chista himself actually was matir that, because Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami once visited Rav Chista on Shabbos, and he sees that there's a duck that had been shochet but wasn't cooked, and his household maids were carrying it out of the sun to the shade because Rav Chista had told them, gosh, I mean, I see we're about to lose a lot of money in this household, and nobody seems to care. From which they got the idea, oh, I guess he doesn't like the idea of the duck being sitting there in the sun, so they moved it out of the sun to the cooler, okay? So apparently Rav Chista held, you say Rav Chista holds his muktzah, why in the world would he have said that they should move it on Shabbos if he holds its muktzah? That's different. That's because duck can, in fact, be eaten raw because it is soft. Now, anybody who's eaten duck knows it isn't soft, but that's because it's cooked. Ha-ha! So if the duck is raw, it actually is duck tatar, and that's even better. Okay, Tana Rabbana, how about salted fish? Oh, man, well, obviously, what you want to do, can't solve the Kedushim on Shabbos. Mutu l'taltalo, that you're certainly allowed to move. But how about unsalted fish? Well, that you're not allowed to be metaltal. Now, Richie is upset. Because what do you do about raw fish, Rich? Forget it. I mean, what's a Shabbos without poisson cru?
Raw tuna.
All right. So this thing doesn't fit Richie at all. Basar, okay. How about raw meat? So over there, it's mutar. Obviously, only I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon. Whether it was salted or whether it wasn't salted. By the way, one very important Inyan halacha lemaisa that we had before about the duck is that that duck was unsalted, right? That was what Gemara was bringing. Obviously, it was raw. All of these cases, unsalted, which means that there is no need to salt meat before eating it. Many people make this mistake. They think that the din of salting meat is what kashers the meat, right? You have to kasher your meat. That's not true. You do not have to kasher your meat in order to eat it. The only problem is that if you didn't remove the blood that's in the evarim, which is mutter to eat, then what happens is that when you cook it, that blood is exuded. Once it's exuded, then it becomes usur. But if you're going to eat it raw, then there's not a problem. So you could just eat it together with whatever dam is nivla in the evorim. It's important to remember. Tana Rabbanan, mitaltelin et ha'atzamot mipnei shehu ma'achal leklavim. Okay, bones. Well, obviously, doggies love bones, so you can certainly move bones on Shabbos. And basar tafuach, you can even move meat that is spoiled because that is kosher for chayot, so all kinds of animals would eat that. How about mayim migulin, which are dangerous, and even animals, you would never feed mayim migulin because they may be poisonous, right? So you should not be able to, but you can. Why? Because they're good for cats. Remember that cats, the main reason that people grew cats as household pets around here anyway, was in order to avoid the dangers of snakes, because cats love to go after snakes, and they are apparently, they don't have any problems eating snakes even that are poisonous, and so says the Gemara, so they wouldn't be affected by mayim migulim. So you could always give it to the cat. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says you definitely cannot do that because you're not even allowed to keep it for one moment. You've got to spill it out. What if somebody accidentally drinks some? And that would be a sakana. So therefore, it's vadai muktza because you're not allowed to even have it in your home. And now that brings us to a moment of pure Le Capitan. Oh, speaking of which, what would be good for moose? Uh-huh. The deer we already talked about. And I'm sure you've been taking good care of the deer.
I'm in the business of trapping, and I wouldn't want to run after a moose.
No, definitely no fun.
One so far this season.
Okay, great.
Remember, Rebbe's going to drink while Richie's.
Yes. Thank you, Reb Arnaya. Such care. I really, I'm not being sarcastic. I really appreciate it. Go ahead, Sir Richard. Ah, lovely. So, we get now to a Mishnah that we spoke about a long time ago. And there, early on, where we had all of the issues about whether you're allowed to be metaltel a kli for something that itself is usur to move. Remember? So that was Rabbi Yitzchak Shita. You can't do that. So we asked on him earlier, what are you going to do with this Mishnah? The Mishnah says that you could take a basket, you could put it down in front of chicks that are not able to get out of their chicken coop or whatever, and that way they're able to come up and down it, right? And you can move them. So how are you able to do that? What about the issue of not moving something for that is usur? So we answered it over there. Even Rabbi Yitzchak says here it's talking about that you needed it for some other purpose. We don't paskin that way anyway, so we don't need to come on to that. So the idea over here is that there is no isser. That's the whole point of the Mishnah. There is no isser in moving something l'tzorech hadavar she'eino nita. And in fact, if you want to move it specifically for that purpose, it would be fine. Not like Rabbi Yitzchak. Okay, what about if a tarnagolet ran out of the yard? Now, if it ran out of the yard, there's serious problems, not only for you in terms of the tarnagolets being stolen or something like that. There's serious problems for the poor tarnagolet because the likelihood of its getting pounced upon by a cat or run over by a car and so on leads to the additional question of saving it from tzar balechayim. And that's another question we need to get into over here in terms of our care for animals. And the halakha is over there. You can push that tarnagolet, keep pushing her. Can't lift her, but you can push her until she gets back into the yard. When it comes to agalim, usiachin, where you've got like calves or you have young donkeys, so then you can actually do more than that. Not just push, but you can actually be modet. Yidodun, yidodun. Remember, Har Sinai means the Malachi Asharis came along and they supported the Bnei Yisrael. Come on, little boy, move those feet forward, forward, right? And that's the idea over here that you do to the animal. You hold them up, pushing them gently so they start moving their feet. Now that, for some reason, you can't do in the Tarnagolet Shebarachah. So in other words, level one would be to push. Level two is to be modet. So medadin agalim yachin. And level three is that a woman can be medada et bina even in Rishus Arabim. And over here, up until now, by agalim yachin, we were talking about Carmelite, but not a Rishus Arabim. So, but when is this? Amar Rav Yehuda, this is dafka. If the child can at least move one foot up, when you hold the child up, so that's a very right before walking stage. A child starts to move a leg forward and then move the next leg forward. You know, so you move a shoulder up ahead and then the kid moves the equivalent leg. And it gets them sort of used to walking. That you're allowed to do because you're not actually carrying the child. But it's dafkes manchu notelachat miniachachat. But if he's just dragging along, that is called carrying. And you're not allowed to carry a child on Shabbos in a Rishos HaRabim. So that would be mamish carrying, and that would be us. On review to Amarav, behemash naflala amatamayim. Now, how about in a case where an animal falls into a stream, okay? The water is flowing. What can you do over there? Can you lift it up? No, but you can be maybe karimuch statot. It's similar to the case in the Mishnah, where you want to bring a kli to allow the animal to get itself out of this pickle, right? So if it can climb up, you let these karimuch statot, and you put it in the water in a way that it gets under it, so that it'll manage to get out. The imal talta. So if the animal gets out, you didn't take it out, so there'd be no problem of tiltal over there. Meisvei. How could Rav say that you're allowed to actually bring things for the animal to climb up if it says in the Braita that you can go and give it something to eat and so on? It doesn't say over here you do more than that. Parnasa, yes, but Karim Vichstatot doesn't say you can go that far. The point is that over here, obviously, it's an option, right? Because it says you could do the parnasa. Okay, if it's an option to do parnasa. I mean, what if it's not an option? Meaning, you're talking about water that's flowing very quickly. How in the world are you going to give it parnasa? I mean, anything they put there is going to disappear in a minute. So what do you do then? That's what Rav was talking about. Rav was talking about where it's not efshir, but parnasa, and therefore we do it because it's tzar balei chayim. So efshir le parnasa, yes, that's all you can do. But if not, maybe karim gusatot, and you put it underneath it, and then you are able to allow it to come out. Fine. There, by the way, is a machlokas, you should know, about whether this second case, Rav's case, is also where it's efshir. In other words, and what if it's not efshir? Well, what if there's no way that you could even jam karim v'chstatot, that the animal's drowning and is in terrible tsar? Are you allowed to actually lift it up mamish or not for the same tsar balakayim? It was how much were we matir as a machlokas rishonim? Ask the Gemara, but even Rav's idea should be an iser because you're being mevatel klei mehechano. Remember we said before there's a different concept. There's a concept which is similar to stira, or was machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, whether it's stira or whether it's binyan, which is called mevatel klei mehechano. So you're basically making this thing stuck there. And if it gets stuck there, you're not going to be able to use it all Shabbos. Stuck is either a problem of binyan, because now it's permanently implanted there, or it's stira, because you had a good kli before and now you've wrecked it. That's machlokas Tosfos and Rashi, respectively. So why isn't that usher over here? And even if the animal climbs up, I mean, it may very well just climb up and not be able to get off. so it won't drown. But meanwhile, you're going to be mevatel kli meichel. And anyway, getting a soaking wet korem uchsatot is going to be mevatel kli meichel no matter what, right? Well, that's because you're right. It is aser to do what you're asering, what you're doing here, but it's only asered min rabbana. So therefore, Rav says, look, being mevatel kli meichel is an iser drabbana. And an animal suffering is a problem d'oraisa. And therefore, we're much more, because, I mean, this is a machlokas actually, but according to the Man Yomar who holds that the halacha for the din that you're mechuyev to save an animal that has collapsed under its load, and it's not a din in Ashavas Aveda, it's a din in Tzar Balei Chayim, therefore it has nothing to do with who the owner of the load is and so on and so forth, or whether he's willing to help you or not. So that's a machlokas. But according to that, the Torah is gufa being megala at that moment. If you see an animal in distress, you're mechuyev to help the animal in distress. So then that's a d'oraisa. And Rav holds that that's the pshat. So because of that, a d'oraisa is going to be doicha de rabbanan. If I'm mechuyev to help that animal, then I'm not going to have the rabbanan aser the din of mevata klei neichano because it's similar to binyan or to stira. Okay, let's take a look at the various levels in the Mishnah about different types of animals, about pushing or being modeid or being modeid in Rishus Harabim. I mean, why are we differentiating? I mean, when it came to a hen, so over there you say, well, you're only allowed to push it, right? So dochin, okay, that's fine. But midadin, say you're allowed to do to a hen what you are allowed to do for an egel, why not? Tanina lahadatan rabbanan, that is something that the rabbanan pointed out, beferish, that midadin behema, chaya, va'of, and other birds. There's something special about a hen. So that you can do to help them in an area that's not a Rishus HaRabim, but you can't do that for a tarnagolet. Why? Rabbi, because if you try doing that with a hen, the first thing that the bird does is it lifts its leg off of the ground. And because of that, you're going to end up carrying it. There's no way to actually be moded. The moment you start pushing and give a little bit of a push to one side by lifting that side up so that it should walk, it doesn't walk. It pulls its feet up. Tani Chada, by the way, we're going to see this is very nogea. It's actually nogea bizman hazeh in terms of dinim of shchita, which we'll talk about in a moment. Now, Jeff, in the middle of Manhattan or New Jersey, I mean, he's got chickens, and they go running around his living room all the time, and he's got this problem, right? I mean, look, you do want to get back to nature. I mean, especially if you're in New Jersey, right, where everything is just gray and hopeless. So what do? You bring chickens. Also, you never know if there's going to be food tomorrow. I mean, what the heck? They don't have food in that place. So you make sure that you grow chickens in your living room. So we are fortunate to have not only our own special farmer, Ira, who's been very busy, but we also have our chicken farming Jeff. So thank you very much for the insights here. What a group, let me tell you. Okay, so the reason is that you'd end up carrying it. Now, one brisa says, "Midadin behema chayev of bechatzer, avlo b'rishut harabim." So when it comes to an animal, you can do this in a chatzer, but you can't do it in a rishus harabim, because even though in rishus harabim, we're concerned, obviously we said before, about tzar balei chayim, but apparently the most you can do is something that's not possibly going to lead you to be over on the d'oraisa because you may be carrying it, right? So even though we had a machlokas before about whether the din of chai noseyat atzmo is true only of a human or whether it's also true of an animal. Remember the whole big discussion that we had about the horses and things like that, right? So that was a machlokas. So apparently we're going over here with the shita that chai noseyat atzmo does not apply to animals because the animal is struggling against being carried, and therefore that's not called noseyat atzmo. And therefore, if in fact you will carry it, you're going to be doing an issur d'oraisa if you carry arba amos rishus harabim. So because of that, they asered it in rishus harabim. And the woman, on the other hand, she can even do this in a Rishus HaRabim, because even if she actually did carry him, but remember, Chai Nosei Et Atzmo definitely is true Lagabe a human, so therefore if she carries the child in the end, then it would only be an Issur Rabbanan and not an Issur D'oraisa. Obviously, she could do this in the Chotzer. So that's Braita A. Now, Braita B says, you can't lift up a behema or a chaya or an oaf, meaning taking completely off of the ground, but that's because of mukta, that's even in a chotzer. But you are allowed to push them. Now, this is a contradiction, right? I mean, at least the second part is a contradiction. First, you say ain okrin. You can't go ahead and lift it off of the ground. But okrin was the maximum that you could. We had dochin, we had madadin, and then we have okrin. Now, you left out madadin. You went from one extreme to the other, which gives us a different halacha, gabi medida, right? So first you said ein okrim, which means that you would be able to do davui, you could do madadin. And then you say, but you can only push it. Only push it, but that we said means specifically to push and not to be medadet. So which way is it? Amar Abaya, remember that there's a specific thing, the gabi tanegolet, where you are not allowed to be modade. That is, in fact, talking about that, because you're always going to end up being oker, because it pulls its feet up. Now, there's another big problem with chickens or with roosters, somehow dafka, the gears, instead of tarnagola, they make tarnagola. And that is, if you're going to do shechita to fowl like that, you've got a problem, because you have to make sure that it doesn't struggle against you, b'shat shechita, with its feet. So you have two choices. Either you push it down on the ground in such a way that its legs are bent upwards, that it can't really do anything much with them, or you have to pick it off the ground entirely. Or, of course, you can always use the Empire Chicken approach and hang it by its legs off of a conveyor belt. But in any event, it cannot have access to something to push against you with, because the tendency that it does is that it'll be manach le'letufrei ba'ara. It puts in a tremendous amount of pressure by pushing its nails against, or its claw against you to pull away from you in the ground. And in doing that, it can actually cause ikur, the simonim, which now in the state you're holding and you're trying to be shoycheted, if it ends up tearing the simonim because of this extra pressure, then the shechita is going to be pasul. So never allow it to hold itself on the ground in a way that it can actively struggle against you. And now we are ready for another wonderful moment of Richie and Barnea's drinking.
Barnea's drinking.
L'chaim.
Barnea, drink.
Lovely. I see Shabbos was very restful, Capitan.
Very restful. That's so much time.
Okay, Baruch Hashem. Shabbat, ba menucha. Ein miyaldin et habeima biyom tov. So moving on to other things that we do for animals. Can we do a delivery? No. Even on yontov, you cannot deliver the child. We'll see what this means in the Gemara. How much is considered to be delivery? Avo misa'adin, you can help it. Again, to be discussed. But you can definitely be miyaled a human. And that's because that's considered to be, no matter what you do, is considered to be helping a chola sheyesh bo sakana, because giving birth is considered to be an inyan of sakana. Now, it's not the same as a normal chola sheyesh bo sakana, because it's darko shel olam, and we'll see there are subtle differences, but you can definitely be miyale, the woman. Korin la chachama mimakom lemakom. You can call a midwife on your phone. You can have her travel on Shabbos outside of the tchum. And in general, you could be mechalin and aleos haShabbos, which the Gemara is going to explain. What are you adding with that? V'koshrin et hatibur. You're even allowed to tie the umbilical cord. And Rabbi Yossi says, what do you mean tie? You can actually cut the umbilicus. You know, I mean, we don't want her to be pulling by accident and getting into trouble over there. That's why we cut it. V'chol tzorchei mila osin b'shabbat. And once already we're talking about the birth, just like the Torah does, in discussing birth, it discusses mila. And this is going to get us into a lot of the inyanim of Mila on Shabbos as the Mishnah is developed. Now, when you say you can help an animal's process of birthing, what can you do? Rav Yehuda says, well, you can support the newborn that it doesn't fall. That's what you can do. Rav Nachman says, no, you could do more than that. You can even press down on the outside of the uterus in order to help the movement of the fetus to come out. Atanik Abbas de Rav Yehuda. Actually, we have a braita that says, "Beferish ketzad misa'adin, o chazina tavalat shelo yipol la'aretz." We hold the child so that it doesn't fall. V'nofeach lo b'chotmo. Then when it comes, as far as the child is concerned, you can also clear its nostrils and get it breathing. V'notein lo dad l'toch piv. You can also put the mother's teat into its mouth in order that it should start suckling if it hasn't been doing that. Amrav Shimon ben Gamliel, not only that, but where you have a case that a mother rejects the child, which of course is a real sakonas sefashas, and which happens often enough for us to worry about. So you think it's only humans that reject their children? So when you get a child, it's interesting that Harriet describes these crazy cases where like a sheep just takes this instant dislike to its child and just starts kicking it and trying to get rid of it. And it must think it's very, very ugly and a bad representative of the mom, you know. So in any event, what do you do? That's called mirachamim. It means you bring rachamim to the mother so that it will care about its child. So merachamim ha'ginu al beima to'ora b'yom tov. Even on Yom Tov, we used to do that, but not on Shabbos. And we're going to explain. Heichi avit. So like, what do you do to do that? So Baya says, what, you could bring like a bul shel melach, which is like a handful of salt, and you put it into the vagina in order for the animal to remember the very pain that it's gone through in giving birth, and it should just remind her so that then she'll make the connection to have rachamim on the child. I don't know. That's sort of reading a lot into an animal mind over here, but okay. So that's the way we do it. And mizalfin, you can also be mizalef meishilya agabe avla. Now, this is actually something that that they do. Again, I mean, I learned all of my farming stuff, not from Jeff, now that I have a new teacher, but I learned all my farming stuff from Harriet. So he describes doing this very much. So they take the placenta and they'll use the placenta, rubbing the placenta around the child, which somehow or other, Kadesha Tariach Recho Trachim Alav, that connects her somehow because of the pheromones that are there to be Merachim on it. I think we should expand your wife's interest over here. I mean, you could be raising fish and deer, who knows what. Maybe even elephants. Vedavka tohora. Now, we only did this, it says, abeima tohora. We only did this on kosher animals. We would not do it for a non-kosher animal. Why is that? Because it's almost unheard of that a non-kosher animal should reject a child. And even though you think it's rejecting the child, you probably are misinterpreting what's happening. And I mean, if it happened and you see, look, there's no other explanation, so there's no point in trying to do anything about it, because if that happens, it'll never take it back. Lo mekarva. There's nothing you can do to change its mind. Very much our current situation, right? Mialdina ta isha. And it says you're allowed to call the doctor, the midwife, and so on. And then it adds Michalolinta Shabbat. So what's that new thing? Michalolinta Shabbat. I mean, Michte. You said Mialdina Taisha. You said Karina Chachama Mimakom Lamakom. So, I mean, you're already talking about being Michalol Shabbat. So, I mean, what exactly are we talking about here? Michalolinta Shabbat to include what that wasn't expected from before? Isn't that included? So this question itself is a little bit funny, because why necessarily does the first part of the Mishnah mean a deraisa? I mean, especially where when Rashi says beferish that the only issue is going to be an issue of tircha, there is nothing specifically in a delivery that would have to be a chilul Shabbos. So like, where are we saying that there is a deraisa over here. We're talking about maybe tchumim. I mean, the iser tchumim, we're considering that to be the equivalent of an iser malachas. I mean, there's no chiyav misa on iser tchumim. I mean, aren't we going to be more machmer when it comes to an iser karas and iser misa? The Gemara's assumption over here isn't 100% clear. But in any event, what is the additional openly stating Mechalina Le'ezer Shabbat, which clearly means no matter what we have to do? That's coming to tell me what we find in the Braita, that if this woman needs a lamp in the room, so she's like, she's scared or whatever. Now, this is all basically psychological. I mean, what does she need a lamp for? Nonetheless, you do light the lamp. And and if she needs, and that's the Braita. And there's no oil. You can bring, even through a Rosh HaSarabim, you can bring her oil, preferably in the hand, because that way it's not the Derech of Eitzah. If you can't bring enough, we're carrying it in your hand, so then you can put it, your hair in it. How are you going to get out of your hair unless you squeeze it? That we're going to be discussing. You can't get enough oil for her, so then you can actually carry a kli normally, b'machal Shabbos. Now, by the way, these issues are part of the element that I mentioned to you earlier, that it's not considered to be the normal cholash yesh bo sakana. Because a normal cholash yesh bo sakana, we do not do any of these tricks. A normal cholash yesh bo sakana, anything that delays treatment is usur gomer. You can't say, well, let's do it by making a shinui, and then it'll take another few minutes. But there's no such thing. The more that you're able to do a reza meshubach and so on, just make sure that you avoid any kind of dangers. And these differences, we'll see other subtle differences between the normal way in which we deal with a sakana and the way in which we deal with a yoledes, again, are all based on that this is darka shel olam, even though it involves a sakana, because of the fact that it's a built-in biological process, we don't deal with it in the same sense of emergency if there isn't a complication that we would. So we try to avoid whatever we can. Obviously, we do what's necessary. And this is not normal for a regular chola. Omar mar, im haitatzri chaloner, obviously, I mean, is it or is it not a sakana? I mean, if it's a sakana, what do you got to teach me every last detail? So, of course, you can light the fire. No, what we're talking about over here is an amazing thing. She's totally blind. She's totally blind. So why are you allowed to light a fire for her? Because you would have thought, wouldn't you, if she can't see anything, so why should you light it? Kamash malan, that the psychology itself, without having any anof from the lamp, she's nervous. She feels that the doctor can't see properly unless they're going to have more light in the room. Nobody's going to be caring for her properly. She says, you got to turn on the lights. You turn on the lights. Because ituve miyat v'daita, even relieving psychological stress, which is called yishuv hadas, is considered to be a tzorech that is b'chalal Shabbos. And Savra, because she's thinking, you know, if there's light, so then people will see, maybe I need something that they're not noticing, maybe I'm pale or whatever. So Chazi Chaverta, my friend will see it, she's sighted, and she'll do it for me. Vimai Tatsukala Shemen, what do you mean Shemen? How do you carry Shemen in the hair if you're going to need to squeeze it? So then you're going to be doing the same Isser. I mean, so you might as well just carry it. So what's the heter in that? Rabbi of Yezid Amr Tavar, you see from here, Ein Schita B'Sear, hair is non-absorptive. And this is basically the idea of the Shabbos sponges that they market. They utilize material that is not absorptive and that is only holding the liquid because of the fact that there's room cells, so to speak, that are created by the gross material, not the actual capillary effect of the material per se. So because of that, it's not called schita. Rav Ashi says, even if there is a din of schita, still we would want her to do it. And what it means over here would be that she brings a bottle of oil by tying it to her hair. What? Yes. Because kama de efsha l'shanuyeh mishanina, since over here we're talking specifically not the normal idea of a cholash yesh bo sakana, the halacha is, as much as possible, we're mishaneh to avoid not doing it in the normal way that would be mechayev you midiraisa. Since that would be shalokidarka, so then it becomes only an iser derabbanan.